Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. MedPage Today and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel teamed up for a year-long major investigation into physicians who've had public actions against their medical licenses in one state, but are able to practice with supposedly clean licenses in another. This joint investigation worked with TruthMD, which is a Los Angeles-based company whose MedFacts service collects information on physicians from thousands of sources. Through them, the investigators were able to find more than 500 cases where a physician was subject to a medical board action in one state, but were able to practice in another without any restriction. They also gathered thousands of pages of medical board records, court filings, Medicare records, and federal actions on specific cases. The reporters did exclude cases where the initial action was dismissed or found baseless. And of course, they interviewed many people. Physicians accused of wrongdoing, families of those harmed, state medical board officials, and experts in the area of physician discipline. I was a little surprised to read about how easily problematic physicians are able to pick up and move to another state and continue practicing on a different set of patients. I now feel that I need to do quite a bit of research before choosing a physician in any state. My other takeaway after reading these articles was that I should pay attention to my instincts. If something doesn't seem right, there's a good chance it isn't. For instance, if the office of a physician looks filthy or disorganized, I should probably turn around and go back out the door. We're going to start by reading of two specific problematic physicians before we delve into a longer article about the problem in general. These all come from MedPage Today, and this is titled, Seven Surgeries, Two Deaths, and Still Practicing. This was written by John Fauber, a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and MedPage Today, and Matt Wynn, a staff writer for MedPage Today. This was published March 26, 2018. During a brief stint in 2011 as a heart surgeon at Meritor Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, Sean Yetman, MD, performed only seven surgeries. Two of his patients died soon after the procedures, resulting in malpractice lawsuits against Yetman. Both cases were cited by the Wisconsin Medical Board as a part of a 2014 deal it worked out with Yetman that resulted in the surrender of his medical license. Meritor had hired a consultant to review his cases and fired him. After he was fired, Yetman was offered a job at a hospital in Boston, and in August 2012, he obtained a license in Massachusetts. He already held a license in New York, one he had since 2009. Thus, he continued practicing despite the problems in Wisconsin. In the first case, Yetman performed a coronary bypass surgery on Nancy Glumsky, a 61-year-old from Elroy, Wisconsin, on July 20, 2011. She died less than a month later on August 15th. A lawsuit filed by her family accused Yetman of botching the surgery and the repair of a heart valve. Dr. Yetman was clearly an incompetent and an unqualified surgeon who had serious general professional deficiencies, Glumsky's family said in the 2016 lawsuit. The court case recently was dismissed, with the judge saying it had not been filed in a timely manner. An attorney for Glumsky's surviving husband and her estate said the judge's decision will be appealed. A day after Glumsky died, Yetman performed a similar operation on Thomas Pliner, 77, of Wanakee, Wisconsin. He had experienced shortness of breath and went in for cardiac tests at Meritor Hospital. Yetman said he needed to have a heart valve repaired and bypass surgery. Within a week, he had the surgery. He suffered profuse bleeding and died the next day. My dad was a hardworking family man, said Pliner's daughter, Jody Bush. He was married to my mom for 51 years and continued to work as a security guard into his 70s. In giving up his Wisconsin license, Yetman agreed not to try to renew it. But neither Massachusetts nor New York imposed any restrictions. His Massachusetts license lapsed last year. His New York license is active and has no restrictions. Yetman now works at a varicose vein clinic in the New York City area. Not surprisingly, his bio there makes no mention of his time in Wisconsin. Jeffrey Hammond, a spokesman for the New York Department of Health, said he could not confirm or deny any investigation of a physician unless there is a public action taken by the board. In court records and other filings, Yetman denied he was negligent in his care of the two Wisconsin patients. One of the deaths was completely a technical issue, he told an investigator with the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, according to a 2013 memo. The other definitely could have come out different depending on who would have been there with him. Yetman also said that while at Meritor, he was just starting out and that other doctors with 20 to 25 years of experience didn't take him under their wing, the memo said. Yetman did not return calls made to the New York Vein Clinic. Now we have an article, reprimanded and fined in New Jersey, no problem in New York. Written again by Matt Wynn, a staff writer, and Christina Fiore, a contributing writer for MedPage Today. This was published on March 22, 2018. Dermatologist Dmitry Kazik, MD, began his career in New York in 1993 and got his license in New Jersey in 1996. In 2012, New Jersey launched an investigation following a patient complaint about unsanitary conditions. He operated offices in both New York and New Jersey. According to the New Jersey State Board of Medical Examiners, inspectors visited his Jersey City office and found plenty of evidence. Floors and walls spotted with red stains, vials of expired drugs, boxes full of medications and supplies stacked in a waiting room. Although a variety of dermatology procedures were regularly performed, investigators found in the September 2012 inspection, the last pickup from a registered medical waste disposal company was dated July 2012. Medical assistants were not certified as sterilization technicians, and a freezer full of medications had wet, frozen, and torn medication boxes. There were problems that went beyond merely questionable cleanliness. Medical assistants were preparing saline injections, even though they weren't trained to do so. Pre-drawn syringes weren't labeled or dated. Physicians who weren't specialists in dermatology were doing Botox treatments, biopsies, acne surgery, and removing skin growths. Kazik signed off on at least one procedure he did not perform at the presumptively higher fee, the inspection reported. In October 2013, the New Jersey Medical Board reprimanded Kazik, making him take a course on record keeping and pay $1,100 in penalties. A document attached to the inspection report indicated that the event would have been reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, as any reprimand fits the criteria for reporting. It was also reported to the Federation of State Medical Boards, which lists an unspecified action in New Jersey on Kazik's public profile at docinfo.org. But New York, where he also has a license and office, has never taken any public action against him. Reached via email, staff would not say whether they were aware of Kazik's problems in New Jersey. The department cannot confirm or deny the existence of an Office of Professional Medical Conduct investigation of a physician unless and until charges are served or a public action is taken by the state medical board, which is consistent with public health law, Aaron Silk wrote in an email. Kazik didn't return multiple calls or emails seeking comment. And we go now to the main article, States of Disgrace, a flawed system fails to inform the public. This was published on February 28, 2018. Every physician has heard the horror stories. Stories about doctors who sexually harass patients, bungle surgeries, or ignore complications in patients who then die. And what's more, they can get away with it by taking advantage of lags and gaps in the medical licensing system. By hopping state lines or having a fistful of licenses issued by different states, they can continue to practice wherever the grass is greenest. Now, a MedPage Today Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigation reveals the scope of the problem. Between 2011 and 2016, at least 500 physicians were chastised by one state medical board and yet able to hang their shingles at a new address with a clean license. They slipped through the cracks, even though their actions resulted in suspensions, revocation, remedial classes, or a portfolio of letters of concern that castigate them for misconduct. In Colorado, care of a multiple sclerosis patient by Gary Weiss, MD, prompted four medical school physicians to file a complaint with that state's medical board after the woman died. The Colorado board and Weiss agreed that he was permanently inactivating his license in 2014. That did not stop him from practicing in Florida, where he has long held a license. Despite malpractice lawsuits from at least seven patients, all accusing him of misdiagnosing multiple sclerosis, it took Florida more than 3 years to publicly discuss his case. In New York, breast reconstruction surgeon John Siebert, MD, had sex with a patient, got his license suspended for 3 years, and was permanently ordered to have a chaperone in the room whenever he was with a female patient. But he wasn't sanctioned by the medical board in Wisconsin, where he also has a license. Instead, he was named to an endowed chair at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. That chair is funded by a billionaire patient who also is a major supporter and campaign contributor of the governor, who appoints the medical board. Check Jay Reisman, MD, on the website of the Division of Professional Registration in Missouri, and there are no red flags, no disciplinary history. But in Illinois, where a medical board official once called Reisman an imminent danger to the public, the families of his three dead patients remain haunted by what he did. They say they are outraged that he continues to practice medicine. The pattern that emerges is both disturbing and damning. Physicians who are caught in one state slip through the bureaucratic net in another, where they are free to practice without any disclosure. Yet the 500 identified in the year-long investigation most likely underestimates the scope of the problem. It focuses only on those cases where at least one agency took some sort of public action. Most medical issues, including those due to negligence, are never noticed, much less reported or acted on, said Julia Hallisey, founder of the Empowered Patient Coalition, a California-based patient advocacy group. The numbers you're showing are not anywhere near the real numbers, she said. If something goes wrong in a surgery, or you get an infection, or your 80-year-old mother is given the wrong medicine, you may never know that came from this doctor, their impairment, their lack of skill. A 30-year-old federal database, the National Practitioners Data Bank, was designed to keep state medical boards and hospitals apprised of physician transgressions around the country. But it's confidential, and its data are often ignored or overlooked by state medical boards. Moreover, MedPage Today Journal Sentinel found that board officials were not always forthcoming about the reasoning behind their lack of action. Officials in New York, for example, said Siebert showed a moral unfitness to practice, while Wisconsin officials said the case against him was a minor or technical violation. Despite more than a dozen malpractice lawsuits against Reisman, officials in Kansas eventually relented and allowed him to perform surgeries, though they made him promise not to actually do any. Asked to explain the decision, Kathleen Lippert, executive director of the Kansas State Board of Healing Art, wrote in an email, "There is little or nothing to add." To examine the issue, MedPage Today and the Journal Sentinel enlisted the help of TruthMD's MedFacts data service that compiles physician dossiers drawn from thousands of sources, including civil and criminal courts, state medical boards, and the FDA. MedFacts includes data going back 15 years and about 1 million physicians. The company provided an initial summary of cases of physicians who were in trouble in one state since 2011, but held clean licenses elsewhere. It also supplied dossiers on a small group of physicians who fit that profile. From there, reporters verified the cases, investigating individual examples and obtaining thousands of pages of documents from criminal and civil courts around the country, state medical boards, the FDA, and other sources. Physicians who held licenses in multiple states when they landed in hot water accounted for the vast majority of the cases. But in about 20%, they sought new licenses after trouble started. Then, in their new state, they faced no sanctions. It's a highly flawed system, said Robert Wachter, MD, chairman of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. It has created a patchwork of accountability. It takes something pretty bad to get in trouble with your state licensing board. In 2014, urologist Weiss agreed to an order that permanently barred him ever again seeking licensure in Colorado. In 2015, Illinois reached an agreement with Weiss requiring that he permanently relinquish his license there, which had lapsed in 2002. The agreement was based on the Colorado action. But it took until earlier this month for the Florida Board of Medicine to take public action. The Colorado order stemmed from an accusation of failing to diagnose progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy, PML, in a 63-year-old woman. Weiss had prescribed her natalizumab or Tysabri, an MS drug that is also known to increase risk of PML. Over the months, PML went undetected. Weiss continued the woman on the drug, and her condition deteriorated, according to a complaint filed with the state's medical board by four neurologists from the University of Colorado School of Medicine. The physicians wrote that the woman became forgetful and had had trouble speaking. She soon had to use a wheelchair and eventually went to a nursing home. If the PML had been diagnosed in a timely fashion and treatment instituted, her prognosis would have been improved and she would have avoided much suffering, the physicians wrote in their October 2011 letter to the medical board. It accused Weiss of acting far below the standard of care for neurologists, a charge Weiss denied then and continues to deny. A letter sent to the Colorado board from a physician who reviewed the case supported Weiss's argument. That physician, Ray Lopez of Miami, said the accusations may well stem from the conflict of cultures between the purely academic and the private practitioner, and that Weiss had offered an appropriate standard of care. While that case led to the action in Colorado, it wasn't the end of the accusations. Brenda Colhane is one of five people in Colorado who sued Weiss, claiming he misdiagnosed them as having multiple sclerosis and put them on potentially dangerous drugs. Last summer, two Florida patients filed lawsuits with similar allegations. One of the Colorado suits was dismissed this month. The others are pending, and no court has made any determination as to Weiss's fault or liability in those matters. Colhane went to Weiss at his Vail office in 2007 because she began experiencing weakness in her upper extremities, according to her lawsuit filed in August 2016. Weiss put her on natalizumab. She was given more than 100 infusions through 2014 when another physician, Enrique Alvarez of the University of Colorado, determined Colhane did not have MS. Colhane said the faulty diagnosis caused depression and anxiety. There is no cure for MS, so I was living with the knowledge that eventually I would be completely incapacitated, she said. That was a very difficult thing to live with all those years. In a sworn statement, Andrew Solomon, a neurologist and multiple sclerosis specialist at the University of Vermont who reviewed Colhane's medical records, said Colhane does not and never did have MS. Solomon said he also reviewed the records of 10 other Colorado patients Weiss had diagnosed with MS. To a patient, while Dr. Weiss diagnosed them with MS, while they were put on MS medications with considerable risk for morbidity and even death, and while they received MS treatment for prolonged periods of time, it is my opinion that none of these individuals ever actually had MS, he said. Concerns were also raised about Weiss in an affidavit sworn by John Corboy, MD, a University of Colorado MS specialist and one of the four University of Colorado neurologists who filed the complaint with the Colorado Medical Board. Based on my review of medical records, as well as numerous conversations with other neurologists throughout Colorado, Dr. Weiss has misdiagnosed many, many people with MS, Corboy said in a December 2017 affidavit. Patient records also revealed that Weiss ordered excessive amounts of MRIs, which are taken at the facility he owned, and that he was prescribing unnecessary medications, both for financial gain, Corboy said. In an email provided through a spokesman, Weiss said he and Corboy have a long history. It is safe to say that he does not like me. For him to say I ever ordered a single MRI or treatment for financial gain is outrageous and flatly wrong. He also questioned whether Colhane changed her mind about the care she got from him after talking to a lawyer or being contacted by the physician to whom Weiss sold his Colorado medical practice. That physician sued Weiss over the sale, but later dropped the case. Weiss said the physician told some of his former patients that they had been misdiagnosed. Weiss said that making an MS diagnosis is a difficult, subjective process and that early treatment of suspected cases is important to prevent symptoms years later. The fact that a patient is doing well today may mean that the treatment worked, or it may mean that he or she was one of the fortunate 30% who looked like they have MS but don't, he said. No one knows. In any case, if a patient is healthy, I'm happy. At Weiss's Florida hearing earlier this month, his 3-year-old Colorado order was a point of discussion. One Florida board member said the Colorado discipline seems unusually harsh. Is there something that's going on? Another board member raised a concern about a physician barred from practicing in one state being allowed to practice in Florida. Are we okay having someone having a license in Florida that cannot hold a license in another state where they were banned from practicing medicine and they cannot hold a license there? Another board member said there was plenty of evidence that Weiss was not a danger to the public in Florida. Another board member asked Weiss if he had any other malpractice cases. Weiss acknowledged a case in Florida that he had settled. Then he added, "But I had no malpractice cases." Brad Dalton, a spokesman for Florida's medical board, said information about Weiss's malpractice cases were not included in materials reviewed by board members, as that was not part of the complaint against Dr. Weiss in this particular case. Through a spokesman, Weiss said his response about no malpractice cases was in reference to adjudicated or settled lawsuits. The Florida board issued a letter of concern, a $5,000 fine, and a requirement that Weiss take continuing medical education courses. The agreement does not limit his ability to practice. In his statement, Weiss said he only agreed to give up his Colorado license because he had developed his own health issues that made it impossible for him to live in a high-altitude setting such as Vail. That led him to sell his Colorado business and focus on Florida, where he also lived and had been practicing for years, he said. Weiss said the 5 Colorado malpractice lawsuits are opportunistic and totally unfounded, and the Florida lawsuits are copycats with no more hope of prevailing than those in Colorado. I refuse to settle any of the cases for even a penny, he said. Weiss said the Florida agreement is a very low-level letter of concern triggered by my giving up my Colorado license. The Colorado board said that if allegations were proven at a hearing, it would amount to a prima facie case of unprofessional conduct. Illinois said the allegations, if proven, would constitute grounds for suspending or revoking Weiss's license. MedPage Today and the Journal Sentinel surveyed 62 licensing boards in separate U.S. jurisdictions. In some cases, there are 2 boards in a state, one for allopathic physicians and another for doctors of osteopathy. Of those surveyed, 56 are appointed at least in part by governors, adding an element of politics to the process. Each of those boards can have wildly different rules. A 2016 study in the BMJ found annual rates of discipline ranged from 1.7 per 1,000 physicians in Washington, D.C., to 10.3 per 1,000 in Delaware, looking at numbers averaged over 5 years at the start of the decade. Similarly, there's significant variation in both quantity and quality of information each board publishes. Consider Julie Sullivan, MD of Oceanside, California. That state's licensing website shows a clean record. No hospital disciplinary actions, no action taken by other states, no court orders, or anything else that might raise eyebrows. It does not mention the problems listed on the Texas Medical Board's website, stemming from her care of a patient who complained of headaches and photophobia. Despite the patient's prior similar symptoms and history of aneurysms, Sullivan did not perform a fundoscopic exam and discharged him with a diagnosis of a severe headache. Less than 6 hours later, the patient went to an emergency room where a CT exam showed a ventricle choroid cyst in the man's brain. He then suffered a fatal cardiac arrest on the way to another hospital. Texas ordered Sullivan to take CME courses on various topics, including headache treatment. It also told her to provide a copy of the order to all institutions where she had or was applying for privileges. Of course, that applied only within the state of Texas. California records show nothing about it. The California site also doesn't mention that a health insurance company had trouble getting information from Sullivan about the encounter, for which it issued her a corrective action plan. A spokesman for the Medical Board of California, Carlos Villatora, said the site does not include Sullivan's Texas record because it preceded her licensure in that state. Texas disciplined her on June 12, 2015. Her California license was issued on September 16, 2015. As such, it does not meet the criteria for posting on the website, Villatora wrote in an email. There are many sources that can provide a picture of a physician's history, including discipline by their state medical board, discipline by other states, malpractice claims and payouts, loss of hospital privileges, criminal convictions, Medicaid, Medicare exclusions and fraud charges, and actions by the Drug Enforcement Agency and the FDA. But no state consistently reports all these pieces of the puzzle on their website. According to a MedPage Today and Journal Sentinel analysis, only 5 states report 6 of these 7 categories: Florida, Kansas, Maryland, Massachusetts, and North Carolina. 5 other states regularly reported 5 categories: California, Georgia, Indiana, New York, and Tennessee. The majority report only their own disciplinary actions. Should all state medical boards list all of these elements? Absolutely, said Sydney Wolf, MD of the watchdog group Public Citizen. A background check on a doctor you have or one you're thinking of going to may have more of an effect on your health than anything else. Thank you for tuning in to Soundbody today. Stay well and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Soundbody, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.